And now, B1039 presents Big Rapids Buzz with Bruce Borkovich and Chris Law. Brought to you by
The Pet Boutique on South 3rd Avenue in Big Rapids. Paris Creek Jewelry in Paris. Purely Clean Services in Big Rapids. Barreton Firearms and Training Center in Barreton. 911 Restoration serving all of West Michigan. Gilbert's Carpets plus Color Tile in South Big Rapids. As well as Benton Baker of Big Rapids. And Big Rapids Realty Susan Bean in Big Rapids.
Along with support from the community. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily those of Up North Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
Good morning. Welcome to BR Buzz. It's Monday, start of a new week. We've got an interesting show, I think. I hope. I've got my neighbor and buddy Mark here in segment two. We'll talk to him. Something that's of great interest to a lot of people in our listening area. Bob, what are we? Is it seven counties, nine counties, something like that,
something like that,
yeah. This show goes to? So we're in a rural outdoor area, and we're going to have some stuff that's pretty interesting. But we're here, Big Rapids Buzz, WBZX, Big Rapids, B1039. And to start with, I attended a meeting this week. It was the local Republican convention. That was the first part of the meeting. And then the second part of the meeting, we had some county commissioners there. We invited, I'm not sure how many exactly. I know that I knew Randy Vetter, who's one of the newer commissioners, was invited, and he committed to coming. And Chris Jane was invited. We thought he was coming. He did not come and could have had a personal issue or something. I don't know. We were hopeful that he was there, a bit disappointed that he wasn't, but that's how life goes. And then Linda Howard, who's been a commissioner for a long time. And so Randy and Linda were our two county commissioners, and we had a chance to ask some questions, and I got to fire off right out of the box with the question, and I want to get it right, so I'm kind of reading it here. This question was posed to both commissioners, two former CIA directors, Panetta and Pompeo, state adamantly, and this was within the last 2 weeks, state adamantly that, quote, these plants are dangerous to our national security and ought not be built, referring to the proposed Goshen plant in Mecosta County. Yesterday, and this, of course, this post was from a few weeks ago, but let's just say recently, the current director of the FBI, so this is the current director under Biden, so it's not this isn't a partisan issue. The current director of the FBI stated that the CCP and their attack on our technology, that would be our cybersecurity and our intellectual property, and this was his quote, because I like to quote facts. I don't like to hear what someone else has said and then repeat it without checking. His quote was, "It is the defining threat of our generation." So when I hear, two former CIA directors and the FBI director say these things, pretty impactful. And the question was, based on this new information, developing information, has your support for the Goshen project changed? Because initially there was, I think, unanimous support for the project at the county level with our county commissioners. And I got to tell you, just getting to know Randy Vetter, but I got to tell you, I was really pleased and impressed with Randy's answer. So I think it's human nature, if you're in a position of authority, of a power, however you want to view that. If you commit to something, if you say something, I think that it's hard for a human, whether it's ego, whether it's pride, whatever you want to call it, I think it's hard for a human to say, I've changed. Because, of course, then you stand the chance of, well, you never say what you mean. You said this back then, and now you're saying this. But I think a sign of wisdom and maturity and humility and leadership is when a person can say, this is my position on something. This is how I felt. And now I've learned more. I've listened. I've taken a look at both sides. New information is out there. And now I feel differently. And so, again, we had Linda Howard there, Randy Vetter. Both people were asked that question. And I think Randy hit a very sincere home run. I hate to say he hit a home run because it could be, you know, someone could say, well, he was just glad handling the crowd. But Randy explained that initially he was for the project. Randy's a conservative, and I think it's safe to say, you know, conservatives are certainly not anti-business. Conservatives want private business, private industry to take care of people, to provide income and jobs and stability and benefits, health insurance, the ability to buy a house, and those sorts of things. And I think, you know, from the beginning of the project, I know I was no big secret here, folks. No one should fall off their chair when I say I was against it. I was against it for two reasons: the potential environmental impact and the security part of it. But to be honest with you, at that time, I wasn't real well informed about the security side of it. I thought, well, you know, I don't think the CCP is has our best interest in mind. I think they're a threat to our existence. But we've really learned a lot since then, and we have learned that this, you know, proposed plant is a subsidiary of a Chinese company controlled by the CCP. So Randy explained that he didn't really go deeply into saying philosophically he has examined the facts and changed, but what he said and what makes me really proud of him is that his job is to listen to the people. He said when this whole thing started, he did his own informal poll, you know, nothing official, and he felt, based on the people he talked to, that he found about 60% for it, 40% against. And that's a big part of why initially he was in support of the project. He has since checked with people, listened to people. He saw the results of the poll that was done in Green Township, where the proposed project is active, and saw that well over 70% of the residents of Green Township were against it. And his answer was basically, listen, my job is to represent the will of the people, and I've determined and discovered that the majority of the people don't want it, and my job is to represent the people. So it was interesting. He didn't really explain internally, personally, how he felt. He talked about what his job as a commissioner is. And I've got a buddy of mine who said years ago, his dad said one of the scariest things he's ever heard a politician say is, I voted my conscience. And when you think of that, you think, isn't that a good thing if a politician votes conscience? And well, he said, well, no, what's your conscience? And your job as an elected official isn't to vote your conscience. Your job is to vote the reasonable, you know, will of the people. Now, let's just say if the people, the majority of the people in your county supported the death penalty for drunk driving, that doesn't mean that you have to look at the reasonableness of that. And that doesn't mean that you're going to say, well, I don't believe someone should be put to death for drunk driving, but most of the people want it, so I support it. It's the reasonable, you know, will of the people. And it was very well received. There were some more, you know, questions. It was kind of a hot seat for both of them. But I was very, very impressed with Randy Vetter. He's a new commissioner, but he's not new to politics. Randy's been on township boards. I think he was a township supervisor for a term or two. He's a local boy. He's a boy. He's in his 60s, but he's a kid compared to me, I guess. But I just think I was really proud of him because one of the things I've observed in 65 years One dynamic is the longer an elected official is in office, the more they seem to transition away from what their job is. The primary job should be to represent the will of the people. And I think what I've seen almost exclusively is that the longer they're in a position of authority, elected official, they see themselves more as an administrator. I'm going to take care of the business of the county and make decisions. And they become full of themselves, maybe. They forget what the original, you know, intent was, why they were hired, why they were elected into office to represent the people. And they see themselves more as a detached. Okay, I'm here now. I'm really good at what I do. I'm comfortable. I know the procedures and the process. And I'm just going to make decisions that I think are right, that I think are best for the people. How scary is that when any human being decides or think they know what's best for us? And I think Randy's quote was, you know, for the people, by the people, and of the people. That's his job. And boy, if our elected officials in this county, if that's what they're doing, we're in good shape. Now, we know that isn't what all of them are doing. The recall was an example of that. I've mentioned this before. The recent recall was not about support for Goshen, because the people who support for Goshen have their reasons. And you can't argue that if it brings jobs to this county, that's a good thing. You can't argue that. To me, it's a set of scales. You pile up the negatives, you pile up the positives, and where does that scale go? And in my mind, the scale is tipped far on the no Goshen side. But I respect and understand the pro Goshen folks and their reasons. But I don't want anyone in a position of power to decide for me that it's a good idea or not a good idea. If I was a pro Goshener, I don't want individuals deciding what's good for me. That's, you know, should be the will of the people. So Randy, you're probably not listening, but if you are, or if you know Randy, give him a pat on the back. And he really was in a tough spot. And it was a tough crowd. It was respectfully done. I was proud of everyone there. Randy gave a well-explained answer and actually answered the question. The other candidate really didn't do that until she was pinned down. And her answer was that she's, you know, her mind hasn't changed, still supports the project, even in light of the things that I brought up, the new security concerns. So enough about that. People out there are thinking, oh, he's talking about Goshen again. He must not be very bright. And I'm here to tell you, I can go back to a few school districts and I can get records where I've been tested, and it will confirm that I'm not too bright. Absolutely. Dig up some of my elementary and high school teachers, you know, they wouldn't be alive, but they'll tell you, yeah, he's a nice young man, but not too bright. But anyhow, that's enough of that. I'm really excited about a guest this morning. I'm not going to steal too much of his thunder. We are going to I'm going to introduce him. He's going to introduce himself. We're going to talk a little bit. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about what he has to offer. But we're here with Mark Schreppenheiser. Mark's my neighbor and my friend, and he's going to talk about his business, his sideline business. It's going to be of a lot of interest to people in the listening area. You are listening to WBZX Big Rapids on B1039. When we return, we're going to get into it with Mark. Good morning. You are listening to WBZX Big Rapids on B1039. This is Bruce Borkovich on the BR Buzz. I forgot to mention, Chris is not here this morning. Unlike an old retired fellow like me, Chris has to work. And Chris is a busy guy, but he's working this morning. And we typically get together at a different time to try and tape something. And it was just a crazy week. So, Chris, look forward to seeing you this week, next week, get back on track. But I'm here with my neighbor and friend and fellow hunter, outdoor enthusiast, Mark Schweppenheiser. And Mark, I'm not going to butcher the name of your sideline business or anything else. I'm going to bring you in. Maybe you could start off by telling folks who you are, your education, your experience, and then what you're doing with this sideline business, and then we're just going to talk more about it because we're into middle of February. This is perfect time to start talking about land management, land development. So here, I'm passing it off to you, buddy. Here we go. It's all yours.
Well, thank you, Bruce. I appreciate you having me here on the show. So my name's Mark Schweppenheiser. I own MS Whitetail Habitat Management. Flows right off the tongue. That was nothing like having a short name. But, you know, what I try to help people do is, you know, increase the habitat and their hunting potential on their property. I have an associate and a bachelor's forestry degree. From my previous life, I also have a master's in urban and regional planning with kind of that environmental focus. In the past, I'd lived out in Colorado for about 10 years, and I've worked for open spaces, which are kind of like parks and things like that. And we did a lot of wildfire mitigation, which means I got to cut a lot of trees and things like that. So I feel, you know, really comfortable around a chainsaw and things like that. And when I came to Michigan, I kind of came for a job, and at one point I was able to buy 40 acres here in Mecosta County. We had actually, my wife and I had rented that place for 2 years, and then I bought a house, and a neighbor of mine, Dave Tassoni, the late Dave Tassoni, gave me a call and said, hey, the place next door is available, and then he's selling it. And the person who owned the property before, Gary Stratz, he actually let me hunt that place when I rented it. So, you know, I killed a pretty nice 8-point there with my bow. And I knew the place had potential, but, I mean, it had good bones, but it had a kind of a long, long way to go. You know, in the back behind the property, there's 22 acres of woods and a 12-acre field that was either planted in corn or it was a hay field. And you know, I have a long, narrow plot. So, you know, having that 12 acres just as a big open void at times was kind of a terrible thing. So when I purchased the property, the first thing I did was take it out of crop production and things like that. You know, started to plant switchgrass and tall grass prairie and started to plant some trees and shrubs. You know, and within a couple more years, I'd always looked to try to have a timber harvest done on the property. It was a lot of basswood and red maple and things like that, not a lot of value. So it took me quite a number of years, and I finally found Park Sawmill. They also cut timber and things like that. Had that accomplished, and that's what really kind of, you know, jump-started kind of reset and succession, right, and having the type of habitat you need to actually hold some deer.
It's a big project. I knew that property somewhat. Matter of fact, there's some real history on that property.
Yes, there
is. I'm not going to go deep into it, but I can tell you one of the most successful undercover operations in the history of the Department of Natural Resources. A good friend of mine was the undercover operative and made a huge bust. This was quite a few years ago, but it was having a tremendous impact on the resources there and the number of deer. It was a commercialized deer poaching, selling, you know, commercialized. So place has got a lot of history.
Yes. Yeah. So we decided to go a little different way with it. And really increase the habitat and opportunity. You know, I have a son now that's 16, and he's into hunting and things like that. So, you know, shortly after, you know, buying that property. So we've lived there for 10 years now. And that first year I actually rented equipment because I didn't have a tractor or anything like that. Well, you know, I rented equipment for 1 year and then bought a tractor and all the implements and things like that, and started to realize there was an opportunity there to help people kind of create habitat and getting on more people's property. I mean, it kind of snowballs into, you know, I always talk about working on your craft. You know, if you work on your craft for 10,000 hours, you become an expert. So one of these years I'll become an expert. But, you know, everything I recommend and things like that, you know, for my business, and you know, I've done the, you know, the switchgrass, the tall grass prairie, the pollinator. I mean, I even planted some giant macanthus this past year, just because I mean, there's always a, you know, there's always the opportunity to create edge, to create diversity, you know, things like that. I mean, that's my natural resources kind of background is, you know, you don't have to look too long into the past to see, you know, the chestnut blight, emerald ash borer. Oh, yeah. I mean, you really, you know, and most of the properties you visit probably have 10 species or less.
Yeah.
On that property, depending on how big it is. Very and things true, like man. That, you know, yeah. So on my property, I'm focusing on diversity. And we've been pretty fortunate so far, you know, most of the diseases and pests, you know, attack one species. We're going to find a species that attacks a bunch of, you know, of
eventually
of different types of trees and things like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, how you insulate yourself, obviously, is to have that diversity, you
absolutely.
Know, also with, you know, conifers, shrubs, trees, you know.
And new aggressive growth. People look at a huge, giant maple tree and think, oh, it's amazing. This has got to be so good for the animals. It does nothing for the animals. If that tree is cut down, 2, 3, 4 years later, it's a jungle around it. Things that are in the soil that have been there for 10 years start growing and provide browse and cover, new aggressive species that perhaps would be more resistant, you know, to a bug pop up. So let's do a quick ID here. We're going to keep talking. This is good stuff. You're listening to WBZX Big Rapids on B1039. And Mark, you really, you know, I think really laid some great groundwork. You didn't read a book or a manual, or go to a seminar, and then buy equipment and start going out on other people's lands to tell them what to do. I know, because I visited your property all these times, and you went and did it, and you know what works, what doesn't. I tried this, it didn't. I tried it the next year, I did it differently, and it did. That's...
No, absolutely. I always tell people a year's a long time to wait if you do it wrong.
Yes,
it you is. Know, with food plots or things like that, so... So yeah, it's a lot of fun to help people, you know, kind of reach their goals and things like that. Because what I've seen is somebody will try something and it doesn't work and they stop. They just quit completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's I'm trying to let people know that, you know, there's kind of a better way to do things.
Yeah, yeah. Mark, let's transition into exactly historically. What do you offer? I know you got a bunch of equipment. So I'm Joe, deer hunter. I love to deer hunt. Like most people, I want to get bigger and better animals and trophy animals and attract more animals to my property. Not only deer, because when we talk about enhancing these properties, it enhances so many other species.
Yeah, absolutely.
So many other species. But so I don't have the equipment, don't have the knowledge. I call you up. What do I expect from me? What are some of the things you can offer me?
So usually when I start with a consultation, I want to find out kind of the nuts and bolts, you know, how many people are hunting, what kind of species you have there. Is it all mature hardwoods? Do you have, you know, any opportunity with fields, you know, fallow ground? Is it currently farmed? Are you doing the farming? Are you having, you know, kind of your neighbor or somebody else do it? Because I always tell people, you know, one of the best things you can do is have a plan. And that's kind of what I specialize in, kind of helping people with access and just recommendations on where I'd put things that, you know, to kind of help you have better hunting. You know, there's obviously a food component, cover component. You know, there's water holes, things like that, travel corridors, you know, creating sanctuaries, things like that. I mean, it's kind of, you know, putting some of these, you know, common strategies together to have better huntability. Now, if you're a terrible hunter, you're probably going to spook a lot of deer, and I don't know that I can help you.
Right.
And I mean, I've, you know, I've gone to people's places where when I've done a plan for them, when I leave, I know they're never going to do anything. So yeah. it's a strange strange thing to have me there. I, you know, I've gone to places and created plans for them, and they've sold it in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's
it's
every level.
Well, what are you showing up with? So I call you. I want you to come out. What are you bringing out? Equipment wise, what do I expect?
So, you know, for the plan, you know, that's usually just a consultation of where I come and visit with you for the whole day. We walk your whole property, you know, whether it be 20 acres or 120 acres. I create it like an aerial photograph with all the improvements that I'm putting on there and 4 or 5, 6 pages of text to kind of help you implement. You know, that's kind of the do-it-yourself kind of guy. You know, as far as equipment goes, I have a 38-horse John Deere tractor with tillers and sprayers, and you know, a lot of people are going no-till. Although my only comment to that is I don't have a no-till drill, so I'm broadcasting seed. That is not the same as being no-till,
right?
And people should certainly, you know, kind of understand that. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. And depending on your soil type, you know, I've done it enough, and you know, there's some strategies there to help it to grow, even if, you know, even when you're not getting as much moisture. Now, if you get no moisture, there's,
you have
no control over that.
Yeah.
But, you know, depending on your soil type, there are some strategies to help, you know, get that seed to soil contact be optimal.
And let me cut in soil. In my experience, the number one mistake do-it-yourselfers do is they don't soil test, and they can spend hundreds and thousands of dollars on equipment and seed and time and everything and get the same lousy result the other year. So I'm assuming there's some soil testing
in there. You know, absolutely. I mean, that's the start to know what you need to add, you know, lime,
pH,
fertilizer, things like that. You know, one of the things a lot of people do if they do have equipment, they love to till. Everybody loves the smell of dirt. I mean, you deep tillage and deep tillage.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's that is bad for your soil. I had mentioned, you know, speaking of soil health, you know, that's kind of a big thing nowadays. And you know, better soil's going to, you know, produce a better product, you know, like a nice heavier loam or things like that. I mean, depending on, you know, loams are always kind of better for tree plantings, for food plots, you know, kind of just about everything. But I had mentioned, you know, farming practices and things like that. You know, a lot of missed opportunity there for property owners is if they, you know, rent that property out, is being able to layer food. You know, are you cover cropping? I mean, it's gonna, you know, if it's in the right place to be able to capitalize on it for hunting, that's a great thing. It's also helping your own soil, you know, and that's depending on what chemicals the farmers are using and things like that. I mean, but that's one of the probably the most missed opportunities out there, is that layering of food in the agricultural sense. You know, so when that corn comes off, you know, that if there's no food there, there's no food there.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously food kind of drives where deer show up.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly.
Absolutely.
If you don't have any
food. That's why we're doing this.
You rarely have, you know, you rarely have deer.
Yeah,
know?
Right on.
Like
so
around us, you know, there's a ton of ag, so it's even hard for us to compete. But, you know, there's other ways with, you know, fruit trees and things
absolutely.
Like that, you know, that's even a higher level of kind of food, you know,
because
those deer can come and, you know, our neighbor, you know, Zach, When he plants 100 acres of cover crop, how does my 2 acres compete with him? I can't, you know?
You have to use, that's where you have to use some strategy. Speaking of fruit trees, I'm assuming you'll consult and help a landowner if they're interested in planting fruit trees. You know me, I think I've planted at least 50 fruit trees over several years. I've planted chestnuts and... And, you know, that's an ongoing thing. Is that something you offer?
Yeah, no, absolutely. A lot of people buy junk, and what they don't understand is, and when I say junk, you know, I mean commercial species. What people don't realize is the orchards and things out there are spraying every 7 to 10 days, you know, throughout the entire growing season to get the good crop that they're getting. And you know, the habitat guys aren't, I mean, if you spray, you know, once or twice a year.
I don't spray at all.
Yeah. Kind of, you know, it defeats the purpose, but, you know, that gets you into a whole nother thing. Like, you know, there's millions of wild crab apple, pear trees out there. I mean, there's not as many pear trees, but, you know, when you drive around and look at crab apples, you know, once I start talking with people, they start actually noticing them. Yeah. Noticing them, you know, you go for a drive right now, I can point out a couple that are, you know, still dropping in February, you know. Not that you always want them dropping in February, but there's, you know, there's that component that you can, I don't know, kind of help them through the winter.
Absolutely.
A little bit, which, you know, in turn, a lot of times makes them show up earlier in the fall, too.
Plus, you're feeding pregnant does.
Yeah.
You're making your land home for those animals. When I planted a lot of pear trees, and why? It's no secret, because most people don't, and deer love pears. So, but I tried to strategically plant species that dropped at different times. I have some that drop in August and September, some in October, November, some December, January, because you're trying to make home for these animals. And so you do offer some of that.
Absolutely. I have about 50 trees that I've planted, and, you know, I've actually started grafting some of the stuff, some of the wild trees, and that, you know, takes you down another rabbit hole of what are you going to do with those and things like that. I mean, you know, I'm not just showing up to a place to try to make money. I'm trying to help you with your habitat. You know, for instance, first time I worked with a guy this year, he wanted to plant something in the spring, and I was like, I knew his soil, and I was like, listen, I'm going to save you some money. We're going to do it in the fall. We're going to do some soil tests and things like that. And you know, last year we had that 6 weeks of no rain. So I even told him, I was like, I don't know if you know this, but I look like a genius right now because I just saved you like $1,000.
Absolutely.
And you wouldn't have had any benefit there. And then you get frustrated and things like that. I mean, so, there's, you know, there's that component to where you've been to enough places, you can start to, you know, start to strategize how somebody can do better.
Yeah.
Because like I said, a year's a long time to wait, you know, if your fall plots, you know, fail. And, you know, and I still every once in a while, you know, take a shortcut or whatever on my own. It's always on my own place.
Yeah.
And, you know, like for instance, this past year I had clover and, alfalfa into a field. And I mean, the deer had just beaten it down to literally nothing. And I knew I should have planted a fall plot in there, and I didn't. And it cost me, because if you don't have food, why are they coming up? Why would they come over?
But now, you know,
yeah.
And that's the value of having your own place and doing it. Now you pass that wisdom and experience on to your clients, which is huge.
No, absolutely. And I knew it, and I was like, no, I'll be all right, because I had planted some corn and cover crop that around the, you know, 4th of July. So, I still had a fair amount.
Right.
But what happened is, you know, Zach, you know, it comes down to a lot of what Zach's doing, too, on my place. You know, he had beans, and when those yellowed, they just came over and wiped out every bit of my food in 2 weeks' time. And then they were, you know, and then they had no more reason. So
I've seen two really common mistakes with land managers, land owners planting, in particular, fruit trees, but any trees. Number one is not fencing them.
Correct.
Because I've seen them spend $30, $40 on a tree. and, you know, a steak and all this stuff. And a deer will come by and take it right down to nothing in a day. And then in that first year and sometimes 2 years, at least weekly watering, depending on how dry it is. Those are the two biggest failures. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean,
you got to put your time in.
And then there's a vole guard, too. Voles are depending on your soil and things like that. That's how I plant them with a vole guard.
Yep. Why, Mark? Listeners probably don't know why. Tell them.
So a vole guard, some hardware cloth, 2 feet tall. Yep. Those voles will just strip all the bark right off.
Girdle that thing right off,
yep. Especially in winter.
Yep.
And spring will come and it'll be dead.
They have nothing to do all day long but girdle trees.
And that's the other thing. I mean, most people have planted fruit trees wrong, bought them from Tractor Supply and things like that. And, one of the things, if you are buying them from Tractor Supply, it's easier to do a little Google search that species and their disease resistance and things like that. I'm not saying you can't buy stuff, Freedom, Liberty, Enterprise, Apple. But those drop times are a little earlier too.
Yeah.
Once again, I'm always looking at diversity, I'm doing the pears, the crab apples, planted some chestnuts myself. It's always nice that, you got to put them in the right soil though, too.
You know,
chestnuts don't like wet ground, things like that. Yeah. I mean, pears will, amazingly be a little more able to handle wetter ground, but even some of the crab apples and stuff. I mean, they're literally grown in a stream at my place.
They do. So one of the things you would offer, I'm Joe landowner, maybe myself, I want to do the fruit tree planting, but as part of your services, if you have a client, you would say, here are the species that are good for your soil type, for our region of Michigan, that will drop it. It isn't as simple as just plant some trees. You want them dropping at different times.
It's not.
And where
you plant them,
Where you plant them.
Exactly. Earlier droppers are by my archery stands. And really, if I, a little further, sitting on the grassy knoll can shoot a little further, those later droppers, I might have them be 200 yards away. And just a little opening where I can, see from the
Mark, grassy knoll. Mark, before I forget, we're going to continue. We've got a few more minutes, just a couple. But before I forget, how does someone get a hold of you?
Oh, so I'm on the World Wide Web.
Name of the business again.
MS Whitetail Habitat Management.
Right.
And you can give me a call at 231-679-1294. It's 231-679-1294.
Excellent. Now, Mark, we've talked about some of the nuts and bolts of, food plots and trees. But I think your business also looks at a little bigger picture on land management. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so, I guess it's kind of that holistic approach. It's not only what your neighbors are doing, it's what you're doing, We talked a little bit about timber management. One of the best habitat tools out there is a chainsaw. Usually the prescription is dictated by what kind of timber and how big your timber is. A lot of people hear hinge cutting and they want to do hinge cutting. Well, if you have, 20 inch diameter trees, you're not doing hinge cutting. And this is kind of what I comment about that is there's so much stick there. You can't just cut that stuff down and let it lay. Literally your prescription is to have a timber harvest to get that wood out of there. There's just way too much volume.
Absolutely. Get the sunlight in.
Yes.
And it's incredible, the stuff that's in that soil waiting for some sunlight.
And
you end up with a jungle that not only benefits deer, like turkey, grouse, woodcock, so many different animals.
Absolutely. You'd be amazed what's in the soil from, when I did my harvest, elderberry and things like that. I mean, there were no shrubs of that anywhere. I mean, it was a fully mature forest and it was, on the brightest, sunniest day, it was dark in my woods. It was, just overstocked and unmanaged. And that's what I see with a lot of, a lot of timberlands in Michigan is that it's been a long time since they've been actively managed at all. And it's always, there's tremendous value there. And I don't want people to discount that.
Right.
The one challenge with with timber is, you know, you can also go decades where it's not great hunting, you know, as it's maturing and things like that. So there's always a kind of that balance there. And, you know, sometimes I'm just encouraging people to do what they need to do to have a decent habitat, to have decent opportunity. You know, I go back to, you know, years a long time to wait. Well, if you don't, you know, most of your opportunities based on habitat, yeah, you have the rut and things like that where anything can happen, but deer, you know, deer gravitate to habitat. You know, pheasant, you know, pheasants forever knows that it's all about the habitat,
It is.
And it really is. You know, if you don't have the right habitat, you're probably never killing a 4-year old.
And
you're probably not even a 3-year old. You might not even see many 2-year olds.
That's right.
I mean, that's just the reality.
The goal is a healthy herd, but the goal is also to have lovely ladies on your property. The big boys will show up. That's what you're doing. You know, you can't expect to see the same number of bucks all the time, but it's amazing if you have a good, healthy number of does and fawns, those big fellas find them.
Yeah, no,
the
absolutely.
Show up.
Absolutely. And you know, like for instance, you know, one of the clients I worked with for a bunch of years, and I always joke because his property was the easiest I've ever worked on. I literally added a food plot, and he kills a bigger deer every single year in the early season. Like this year, his son killed a 14 point. I mean, it's just a sick Macosta County like buck.
Wow.
Literally. About an acre and a half
of a food plot.
Screened it with some switchgrass.
What did you put in there? If people are going to want to know.
You know, just a diverse fall mix with
not brassica. Just one thing.
Yeah, not just one thing. I mean, that's the whole, you go back to the whole soil health thing. You know, I don't know if people have ever heard of Gabe Brown, but, you know, he's kind of that soil health guru. And, you know, once you get to, you know, 7 different species, that's where that, you know, that soil health, where you're really helping that soil.
Yeah, great. One more time, Mark, how do people get a hold of you?
So, World Wide Web, MS Whitetail Habitat Management, or give me a call at 231-679-1294. That's 231-679-1294.
That's awesome. I know there are going to be a lot of listeners interested in this. We're at that point of the year. I would encourage you folks, if you want to reach out to Mark, don't wait until you think you want to put a spring plot in. Now would be the time. It's a great time. Like, we've got 40 and 50 degree weather coming up. Snow's going to be gone. Mark, as a land manager and whitetail expert, it's a great time for him to get on your property. You can't believe what you see before everything turns green as far as trails and movement patterns and everything else. I'd encourage you to get out there. Mark, thanks for coming. We've got to take care of business now.
Yeah, thank you.
Because otherwise, Jen will, she's very rough on me. She not only will threaten me physically, but she'll hurt my feelings. And you know what a sensitive guy I am, right?
Absolutely.
Haven't people called me Mr. Sensitive? Haven't you heard that?
I'm not aware of that, but I will start to, you know, call you that myself.
Yeah.
I would like to say thank you, Bruce. I really appreciate you having me on the show.
I appreciate you as a neighbor and a friend, and we collaborate a lot, so it was great. We might have to have you back another time, you know, to dig. You know, we could do a whole show on trees.
It goes pretty fast.
On planting. We talked about grafting. We could spend a half an hour because you and I are
absolutely.
Doing it.
Yeah, no, so, absolutely.
So I think maybe in the fall or next winter, we'll get you back and focus on fruit trees.
That'd be cool.
Those sorts of things. So a little bit here on the Community Buzz. If you're interested in joining Rotary Club of Big Rapids, you can find them on Facebook at Rotary Club of Big Rapids or stop by the lower level of Artworks building on Tuesdays at noon. Remember, first two lunches are on them. Mesiola Curry Comfort Home is looking for donations for their home. Check out their website, mesiolacurrycomforthome.com. For questions, 231-287-2208. Also, you can get registered for their Euchre tournament on February 3rd. Registration deadline is February 1st. That's done. We're beyond that. That's an old one. Never mind. See, that's why I've got Bob here, because Bob, he knows I'm not real sharp, so he's on me. The Animal Rescue Coalition is a nonprofit no-kill shelter. They always need donations of food and toys. They are Macosta County's only shelter. They also rehabilitate abused and neglected pets. So remember to adopt, don't shop. And any pet is a lifetime commitment, so take it seriously. Each animal they have all need a forever family. We would like to thank our sponsors this week, The Pet Boutique, Paris Creek Jewelry, Good Morning Corey, Purely Clean Services, the Barrington Firearms Training Center, my buddy there, 911 Restoration, Gilbert's Carpet Plus Color Tile, Benton Baker of Big Rapids, Sue Bean at Big Rapids Realtor. Good morning, Sue. Along with other supportive people and businesses from the community. We thank each and every one of you for getting behind the show. If you'd like to sponsor our show, the Big Rapids Buzz, call your best friend Jen here at B1039 at 231-796-1103. She'll get you started. Listen again next Monday, 8:30 a.m. for Big Rapids Buzz with me, Bruce Borkovich, and my partner, Chris Long, on the Big Rapids Buzz.
Listen again next Monday at 8:30 a.m. for Big Rapids Buzz with Bruce Borkovich and Chris Law. Brought to you by
The Pet Boutique on South 3rd Avenue in Big Rapids, Paris Creek Jewelry in Paris, Gilbert's Carpets Plus Color Tile in South Big Rapids, as well as Benton Baker of Big Rapids, Purely Clean Services in Big Rapids, Barreton Firearms and Training Center in Barreton, 911 Restoration serving all of West Michigan, and Big Rapids Realty, Susan Bean in Big Rapids.
Along with support from the community, Big Rapids Buzz, a presentation of B1039.